Good evening, everybody, and welcome to The Fan Experience, the podcast that puts the fans under the spotlight and behind the podium. Have you ever tried to call into a radio talk show to talk about your favorite team, whether it was to vent or to celebrate, you know, their latest win? Well, this is a platform where you can do that and much more. We dive deep into finding out how you became a fan, when you became a fan, and why you remain a fan. We want to find out all about those fan experiences that you had, either watching it at home, watching it with friends, watching it with a loved one, a boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife, at the game, at a bar, what have you. You know, we want to find out those intimate moments that you've had with your team. As always, this show is produced by Playing the Field. Playing the Field is a sports fan community that gives sports fans an outlet to find other sports fans to connect with, whether it be on a platonic level or a romantic level. You want to find somebody to go to games with, you know, go for it. And if you want somebody to find your MVP, then you can sign up at playthefielddating.com right now. Use promo code FANEXPERIENCE. I am your host, Mike Katos, and alongside me is my co-host, Rick Molina.
Mike, how you doing tonight, buddy? It's good to be here.
I'm doing great. How was your weekend of NBA, NHL?
Weekend was good. Saw some Rangers this weekend. Saw a little bit of the NBA. As you know, the Lakers took that one seed. And then watched some baseball. Saw the Yankees torch the Red Sox. Saw the Mets have a tough series this weekend. So there was a lot of good action this weekend. But, you know, we're here, the fan experience. So let's get into it, man. Let's get it going.
Yeah, so, you know, we touched on the NBA and NHL. They started play in their respective bubbles. Yeah, NBA's got one bubble down in Orlando. NHL's got two bubbles up in Canada. And it's been a great success this weekend. You know, a lot of great games on both fronts. And it is now Tuesday, and we have not heard about any kind of COVID outbreaks, you know, and, you know, it's a lot of good games. You know, the Islanders are up 2-0 right now in the series. You know, the Rangers are down right now, but, you know, they're facing elimination tonight. So let's see if they can pull out something. But all great games, all competitive games. You know, you expect that in the NHL playoffs anyway. But it's great to know that, you know, these players are playing and they're not getting into trouble with COVID, you know, as of yet. So fingers crossed that they can get through their respective seasons with limited hiccups, you know. And obviously the title of this episode is Bubble or Trouble. So the trouble is happening in Major League Baseball and continues to happen. You know, we have the Marlins up to about 21 COVID positive. And now over the weekend, the St. Louis Cardinals decided to go to a casino to blow off some steam. And they have now 13 COVID positive. I think it's 7 players and 6 staffers on the Cardinals organization. So not good, not good. All these teams are able to just do whatever they want. And it shows that is not the way to play this. And I really don't know what Rob Manfred is doing. Rick, I want to hear your thoughts.
You know, it's interesting, man. You know, you have the NBA and the NHL with their bubbles, and you can see by the way they put that together that it's actually working. These guys, I mean, other than the Lou Williams situation where he went to a strip club for some chicken wings, for the most part, you know, these guys they're staying in the bubbles. They're not happy. I mean, there was a report today that LeBron James has seemed like he's, you know, too happy in the bubble, but they're in the bubble. They're tested every day. They're not out and about. They're practicing social distancing. If you look, for example, at the NBA on court side of their games, they're all sitting, you know, 6 feet apart from each other. In the NHL, the same thing. It's 5 players on the ice. They're constantly testing. They're in an environment where they're not affected by the COVID-19 virus. If you also notice, when it comes to the Major League Baseball and the NFL, it's the behavior of the players. MLB, guys going out to the casinos as the Cardinals did. the Marlins that were going out and about partying at night. So when you don't adhere to the protocols that they have, social distancing and not congregating with crowds, then that's going to happen. And MLB has a real problem on their hands because one team, the Phillies, almost derailed the the Marlins almost derailed the season. Now you got the Cardinals, and it's postponing games. And the question you have to ask yourself is, if it happens to another team, how many more games are they going to keep postponing? And then in the NFL, with what's going on with COVID, you got players. Some players have tested positive. Matt Stafford had a false positive today. You had Coach Doug Peterson from the Eagles who got COVID-19. But the question in the NFL is, they don't have a bubble, right? So they don't have a bubble. Players can still come and go as they please. But the other question is, do guys want to play? Because there's a serious question within the league about the safety of the game. I mean, these guys are tackling. They're running around each other. They are in close confined quarters when they're on the field. And so that's going to be a real issue. I mean, the NFL right now, I think, what's the deadline? Thursday for
the opt-outs? It's now Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern.
4 p.m., and you got some big names. I mean, Von Miller's considering whether he wants to play. OBJ came out with some comments that, you know, whether this is the right thing for the season. So if there's a way for the NFL or the Major League Baseball to replicate what the NBA and the NHL have done, then I think it'll be a lot safer for the players to go forward. But if they can't find a way to sort of replicate that, or for these guys to just be smart about what they're doing and behave in a way that, you know, they won't ruin the season, then you're going to have a real problem on your hands. So we'll see how it goes. You know, the NFL has got some protocols for the games and, like, you know, who tests what. But what if, like, a whole team tests, like, positive for the coronavirus? I mean, you got 53-man roster, coaches, whatever. Like, what happens then? So I hope they thought those things through. But I think the NBA and the NHL, for the most part, has set the example of how you should do it. And Major League Baseball should have followed those leads. The NFL could still follow the lead because the season's a month away, so it's a wait-and-see approach. But right now, you know, you got to applaud the way the NBA and the NHL have handled this. Major League Baseball, it's just been a complete mess. It's just a disaster. I mean, guys can't, you know, they're just not following what they're supposed to be doing. And then the NFL, guys opting out. So it's a wait-and-see approach for these seasons, and we'll wait and see. But I hope that we have a full NFL season, and I hope for the sake of baseball that they get their act together. Manfred drops the hammer down over there, and these guys act accordingly so we can finish the season and crown a champion.
Yeah, I mean, as far as the MLB goes, you know, I think a lot has happened already, and you can't reverse time on that. And if, you know, if it keeps spreading, it's just not going to be good. You know, I mean, two weekends in a row now, you know, we had a whole Marlins team shut down, which also shut down the Phillies because of the close contact. Then you got now the whole Cardinals team practically shut down. You know, it's just, it's not a good situation to have two weeks in and you got over 40 infected, you know.
Yeah,
and,
dude, it's a disaster. 30, man.
And 30 plus are from two teams, you know, so it's not a great start on MLB's, you know, on the MLB front. But the positive to come out of it is the NFL has been working with the players union on a new collective bargaining agreement. And with all this MLB news, they've been watching and they noticed that, you know, these teams are getting, you know, players infected because they're going out and they're partying. They're going to a restaurant. They're going to the bar. They're going to casinos. I mean, come on. I mean, let's be just a little smart about it. But the NFL now, it's pretty much, you know, they're going to practice. They're going to jump on a bus. They're going to jump on the plane, jump on another bus to the hotel, stay at the hotel the night before the game. They cannot go to a restaurant or anywhere where the public goes to, you know. So it has to be either a, you know, shut down restaurant that's been, like, thoroughly cleaned from any kind of public.
Right.
And they can order room service. They can order, you know, DoorDash and Grubhub and those food delivery services. But they're not allowed to go to a restaurant. They have to stay in that hotel room and wait for their game. Then they go to their game, you know, with multiple buses, and then they go and play. And but they go back, Mike, get on the plane and go.
I get it, but here's the thing, man. Like, you got to, it's 4 months. And if you go to the playoffs, let's say it's another let's say five, almost 6 months. Like, you got to keep these guys in the bubble within the facility. They can't go out. Like, do you really think that a lot of these guys are going to be able to handle this? I mean, we're talking, it's training camp now. I mean, we're talking to like early February that they're going to have to do this. I mean, will they be able to put up with that? I don't know, man. I mean, these guys are used to living the life, and now you're asking them to be confined for almost 6 months. I don't see how that's possible.
I completely agree. You know, and it's really going to be a matter of discipline, willpower on you know, and they are given the option. Hey, opt out. You know, you don't like it, opt out. But it's at least there's some kind of plan. MLB is letting them just go out. You know, the NFL saying you're not allowed to. We don't want you going out. We don't want you risking the season. We don't want you risking, you know, the health of your teammates either. And, right. You know, they're all going to have to act as a team. And obviously those teams that are out of the playoff race and stuff like that, you know, halfway through the season, they're going to be like, well, you know, who cares? You know, and then they're really not going to care. Kind of like the Marlins. You know,
exactly.
They knew they had no chance. So they're like, all right, let's just go party and get COVID. Obviously, they didn't want to get COVID. But, you know, it's just, you know, they didn't really have that that extra motivation, so to speak. But, yeah, I mean, it's I hope that what the NFL put in the collective bargaining agreement is adhered to, you know, somewhat to try and at least – you know, limit the exposure and try and get a little bit more of an NFL season than MLB is looking like they're going to get. You know, but we will, you know, we'll touch base on it a little bit later. And we will be bringing on our guest. Our guest tonight is Chrissy Thomopoulos, and she is a clinical nutritionist and a former basketball player for Hunter College, and even played in Greece in Division A2.
Chrissy, how are you?
Chrissy, how you doing?
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you for coming on. So, Chrissy, you know, we were talking about NBA and NHL, and obviously you're a former basketball player, you know, but let's touch on first, you know, how did you start liking basketball? You know, what got you into it?
Yeah, so I wish I could say that, like, I came from a family where everyone played sports and they just put a basketball in my hand and then I fell in love with it. But I'm actually first generation here. So I'm the first athlete in my family. No one really played sports. And I originally started playing in like fifth or sixth grade because I was really unhealthy and obese. And it was a way for me to have fun and lose some weight. But then in seventh grade, I started playing a little bit more seriously. And that all came about because my dad actually went to a company party and he won Knicks tickets. And I remember they were playing like the Denver Nuggets and we were like, he said, do you want to go? And I said, sure, let's go. And, you know, it's pretty insignificant for someone else just to be like, oh, we're going to go to a game. But for me, it was because I didn't grow up with people playing sports. It was the first time I was exposed to, you know, what could come of me continuing to play basketball. So the next day I signed up at a Boys and Girls Club. I got recruited to an AAU team and then I got recruited to high school, and that's all she wrote. That's kind of how it happened. But from my perspective, the most important thing is that I started playing because I wanted to be healthier and to lose weight. But along my journey, I figured out, you know, food is not just for weight loss or to look a certain way. It's a science, and it's a way to fuel your body so that as an athlete, I could perform optimally.
Awesome. And, you know, so you like the Knicks, and you know, you've also mentioned that you rooted for the Spurs as well, and you grow an affinity for them as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm from New York, so I'm a Knicks fan through and through. You know, we have our ups and our downs, but I think that's how you know I'm a loyal fan, because I never gave up on them. Even when the Nets came around, I stuck with the Knicks. I mean, I don't even know if we have a coach right now. Did they decide on a coach yet?
We have a coach.
We have a coach now? Okay, good.
Yep.
All right, good. So I've been studying. The last time I checked in, they were interviewing him. But I was also a fan of the Spurs just because I'm not so much of a fan per se of like the players, and I don't know all their stats and whatever and their backgrounds, but I'm a big fan of the game. And I'm a big advocate for, you know, the lessons that you learn on the court and how they reflect off the court. And yeah, I love the Spurs, especially, you know, when Tim Duncan was around, that, because a lot of people, you know, they would compare how I played to him pretty much because we both had bad knees and I don't know, solid footwork, I guess. But yeah, so I was a fan of the Spurs, but I'm mostly a Knicks fan.
Got it. Well, Chrissy, it's a pleasure to meet you. You know, you talked about how you were recruited to play AAU ball like right away. Tell us about that experience, because a lot of, you know, athletes who play AAU ball, they play with some superstars, they play with some top-notch people. So tell us about that experience playing in that circuit of AAU basketball.
Yeah, so I don't even know if I'm supposed to say this, but I guess it's too late now. But I was in eighth grade playing on a high school team. So I played a high school AAU team. And, you know, that was a great experience for me because I was surrounded by females who played the same sport as me, who kind of like lived the same life. It was people that I could look up to because they were older. Like some of them were going off to college the following year. And I was in eighth grade, you know, trying to keep up with them. So it was really good for me to learn about the game, to learn the lifestyle that it requires, and then also how to take care of yourself throughout the whole process.
Interesting. Now, you also talk about your clinical nutritionist. Now, at this time, as you're coming into basketball, as you're playing high school basketball and you're about to go into college, is this the time where you started picking up or starting to find a passion for nutrition as an athlete? Tell us a little bit about that, because I'm curious to know how you sort of fell into that.
Yeah, so as I told you, like I started playing to lose weight, and I did lose weight along the way because I was getting older and practicing all the time and playing on, you know, how it goes. You play on like three teams at once, so it's bound to happen. But, you know, I saw that food was not just food. Like nutrition is a science. And I fell in love with it because I realized, you know, I love basketball and I love nutrition as a science. And if I do the right thing in both those, you know, aspects of my life, then I could do what I really want to do. And in terms of nutrition, you know, we could be here all day talking about nutrition in sports. And, you know, the misinformation that's out there, and how much of a need there is for more registered dietitians within the sports realm.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's good to hear.
Awesome. Awesome. And, you know, so you also were given the opportunity to go and play for Greece. And, you know, you mentioned that you loved it over there. And just tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So that's still a little unbelievable to me. And if you ask anyone who I played with or against or tell them like, hey, did you know Chrissy played basketball in Greece? They'd be like, no, like that's unreal. Because I wasn't always, you know, the most talented. And I think that surprise factor is actually something that I take pride in because I wasn't the best, but I was hardworking and I played my role. And it actually came about like in the craziest way, because from the time I was like 12 to when I graduated from Hunter, I dedicated my whole life to basketball. And when we didn't win a championship, I was like devastated. So I was like, I'm done with team sports. That's it. I'm going to an individual sport. And I started actually competing. Well, I was going to compete, but I was training in American style kickboxing. And I really think that everything happens for a reason, because there was like a divide. There's like the Chrissy who played basketball in college and then the Chrissy who played basketball in Greece, because kickboxing, you know, in basketball, you can kind of rely on other people, you know, like if you're having a bad day, you can play your role. It depends on who you're playing. Like if you're having a bad day, someone else could drop 40 and be like, oh, we still won, and you still get credit for it. But in kickboxing, if you don't show up, if you don't prepare, if you're not accountable, you're going to get kicked in the face, and it's no one's fault but your own. And just in the middle of training, I was preparing for nationals, actually, for kickboxing. I got this phone call from Greece, And this guy was telling me, he was like, hey, you know, you want to come play in Greece? I was like, this is a scam. Like, how is this real? Like, you want me to come play in Greece? And then I remembered, he was like, yeah, we saw your highlight tape, because while I was still at Hunter, I had sent a highlight tape to a few coaches. And he was like, our 3-4 just tore their ACL. And we like the way you play. We play this defense where we need someone who communicates. And I was obnoxious on defense and communicating. That was my strong skill, in addition to taking charges. And he was like, I really think that you'll fit the role that we need to fill, but you need to be prepared because you played a 5 and now you're going to be like a 3-4. And are you prepared to do that? But in the process of kickboxing, I was in the best shape of my life. I was mentally tough. I'd lost like 20 pounds. I was like, send over the contract. Let's do it. And before I knew it, I was in Getgida playing basketball.
That's awesome. Yeah, I would have probably thought it was a scam too. But like,
yeah, right? Some random guy from Greece called it.
Yeah.
He's like, hey, how are you? And I'm like, new phone. Who's this? Yeah. I'm like, what's happening?
Where did you play? Like, did you go to different countries, or did was it mostly other teams in Greece that you played?
No, so it was the national team there. So I only played in Greece, and I played for a conference that was only islands, which was actually amazing because, you know, we would take a ferry every other weekend and we'd go to a different island to play games on different Greek islands. So, I mean, I don't think there was much more I could ask for in my life at that time.
100%. You know, Chrissy, you spoke about how in Greece the young teammates would come up to you and ask you questions and talk about your experiences. So talk about that, you know, because fans want to know there's a difference between how you play ball in the States and how you play in Greece. So tell us about what those questions were like. How did you try to sort of inspire these young ladies to continue in a career of basketball, and how were you a mentor to them?
Yeah, so I think that there's this perception here in the States that it's like, and of course Eurobasket is an accomplishment, but at other levels you can play in Greece. I'm not going to say that it's like a breeze, you can just show up and play, but here in the United States we do have a level of competition that is above what it usually is in some areas in Europe, or in Greece. I can only speak to for Greece. And when I went there, I would tell the girls, like, cause they would come up to me, and sometimes like little girls will come to the stadium and, or people from the village or wherever you are, they can come in and they can watch, or like, sometimes we'll tell them to join in for fun if we're not going over anything important. And they'd be like, oh no, I'm not good enough to like go play in college in the United States, or I'm not good enough to play like you. And I was like, well, I wasn't good either. I was okay. Like I said, I wasn't terrible, but if you stick to something and if you just put your mind to it, you can do it. And I told them, you don't have to be number one. I was never number one, but the person who was number one knew that I was right behind them, waiting for them to get tired or lazy or slip up or go out the night before and not be able to play. And then I took advantage of that opportunity. And I told them, you know, and even when I coached here, I coached a middle school here in the States, 2-time champions, by the way.
Congratulations.
And when I coached at a middle school here, I would tell them, who you are on the court is a reflection of who you're going to be like off the court as well. And that's what I would tell the girls in Greece. I'm like, I'm no one special. I just worked really hard and I did what I love, and you could do that with anything.
That's incredible. And you also speak about your humility. It caught my eye how you say basketball saved your life in so many ways, and it taught you, you know, how to be successful yet humble. So tell us a little bit about that. I mean, how did the sport of basketball save your life in such a way that it gave you such perspective in life?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is just, you know, it really kept me out of trouble. It surrounded me with people who I could look up to, especially when I was the only freshman on varsity in high school. I could have been doing a lot of other things. And instead, I was sticking with my team. You know, we had those 5 a.m. practices. And from a young age, I learned, like, you know, your actions have consequences. So that was one way, which it kind of, I think, saved my life in many ways. It also saved my life in a health perspective, because if I never got into sports or if I never got into basketball, maybe I would have had a lot of other health issues right now. Who knows? And then also I had some like other things going on in my life, and basketball was my outlet. And I think from what I've experienced with other teammates, it's their outlet as well. And when, like I said, like when I finally graduated from Hunter, I could take care of those other things that were kind of a mess in my life. And then when I went back to basketball, I realized, you know, I'm coming back stronger than ever. It taught me a lot of lessons about, you know, self-discipline, time management, how to be a leader, all these things that you need in life. And now, you know, I'm the first person in my family to get a Master of Science degree. I'm the first one in my entire family to ever play basketball in college or play a sport in college. I'm going to be the first doctor in my family, like a doctor of nutrition. I'm getting my PhD now. And all of that is because I played sports and I had great coaches who really instilled the idea that, you know, what you do on the court is what you do off the court.
That's great. You know, I love those lessons, and I completely agree. You know, sports is just, you know, puts you on that path where you can't get into trouble in ways that people that don't play sports, you know, at a young age, don't, you know, go down. And, you know, tell us about your relationship with your teammates, whether, you know, from Hunter or from high school or even from Greece, you know, like, and that the bond that you guys form.
Oh yeah. So, you know, my teammates became my best friend throughout high school. My high school team, of course, I got along with them, but I think my AAU team was probably because in the summertime, we spent every day together. We had training or we were just hanging out or, you know, my coaches really trained us as if we were a Division I basketball team when we were only, how old, like 16, 17 years old. So every moment of our time was spent together. And, you know, those are my friends. We have matching tattoos, just for my AAU team, some of us. We made stupid mistakes together. We learned from it. We ran together for our stupid mistakes, you know. And those are friends that I'll have forever. And my teammates in Greece, I mean, I still talk to them. I FaceTime them all the time because when, you know, here I was playing for fun. Like AAU was fun. In college, it was a lot more serious than that. But then once I got to Greece, I needed to show up every single day because that's what they were paying me for. They didn't fly me in for me to be like, oh no, you know, I don't feel like practicing today. So we knew the standard that we wanted to hold each other at. And I mean, that just made us even better friends. And I really can't wait to go back to see them.
Awesome. Yeah. I mean, I've only been to Greece once and I want to go back for sure. You know, I could just imagine that experience of, you know, just jumping on a ferry, going to another island every weekend to play a different team. You know, that must be, you know, so much fun. Let me ask you, have you been paying attention to the NBA since it started back up?
I've been studying a lot. Let me tell you, I'm one of those people where, like, now that I've accomplished my goal, I like move on to the next goal. So yeah, of course I watch basketball sometimes. I watched a little bit of the 76ers game last night. I think Simmons like fouled out in like 10 minutes. I don't know. It was really fast. I don't remember. But I was like, oh wow, that's me back at Hunter. That's so cool. But I watch a little bit here and there. But I did want to comment because you guys were just talking about the COVID situation. I know that it's not the best situation for them to be in the bubble, but they get to do what they want to do. Like they get to play basketball. They're safe. Their families are safe. Other people are safe because it really is a chain reaction. And being, you know, an aspiring healthcare professional, I'm almost there. I just have to take my board exam. I can tell you that it's a lot more serious than just like, oh, I have to be in a bubble when I'm in an arena. Like if one person gets it, 15 other people can get it. And so I'm proud of the NBA for making the accommodations that they have. Like those electronic fans are awesome.
So you don't condone of people going to a casino right before a game?
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I don't. Even without COVID times, is that where you should be?
Yeah,
I don't think so. I don't think so. I don't think you have to do much research on that either.
Yeah, I don't know.
Rick,
You know, Christy, you're in the fan experience, and one of the things we like to ask our fans or our guests about these superstitions, and you got some interesting ones that I read here. You shaved your legs the night before a game, warning for travel. You had 6 egg whites for breakfast. Eight pasta. Tell us about, where did these come from? Like, were these just some things that you just, that just sort of happened on their own? Or was it, I mean, where did all this start?
Yeah, so it's like I started with one thing and then we would win or I would have a good game. And I'm like, oh, well, now I have to do what I did the night before again. So, yeah, I think the nutrition ones are what first come to mind. Obviously, it's like I wake up way earlier than I should. So I go to sleep early, wake up early. I eat my breakfast. Then I'll go shoot around, you know, just to get my muscles warm. I have arthritis in my knees. Got to get the juices flowing a little bit. And then 4 hours before the game, I have to eat pasta in between, and it's plain pasta. And then in between there, I'll braid my hair to travel to the game. That's what I was doing in Greece. And then once I got there, I would put it up in a bun because if I wore the braid, it would hit me in the face.
Okay.
So it had to be in a bun. Yeah. And then during the game, like if one shoe came untied and I had to tie my shoe, the other shoe also, I untied it and had to tie it. What else? Oh, if you wipe the bottom of one sneaker, you have to wipe the bottom of the other sneaker. And then don't even get me started with my foul shot. It looks ridiculous and it was terrible in the beginning, but towards the end, let me tell you, my free throw percentage was great. So.
Those are some interesting superstitions, I got to say. it got me laughing over here. The other thing, and then the other follow-up question I had, so you're a clinical nutritionist, so you're talking to a couple of guys. I mean, I can speak for myself. I'm not the healthiest of person. So for somebody who's, you know, looking into sort of an athlete who's getting to that, like how do they sort of approach their nutrition? Like what are the things they can do? What can they change? Like, tell our viewers who might be saying, hey, I need to sort of get a little healthier, how they can embark on that journey to do that. Because you'd be the great person to talk to.
Yeah. So I actually worked with athletes for a while, a couple of guys in D-League over here. I'm in Philadelphia now. That's why I say over here. And I also worked at a D1 university around here as a dietitian's assistant. And I can tell you that we approach every person's health individually, and registered dietitians are the most qualified nutrition professionals. We go through, and many people don't know how registered dietitians become dietitians. I mean, a dietitian can say they're a nutritionist, but a nutritionist cannot say that they're a registered dietitian. Actually, anyone can say that they're a nutritionist. So to become a registered dietitian, you have to get your bachelor's degree, and there are a number of classes that you have to fulfill. Then you can get a master's degree. And by 2024, every registered dietitian is going to be required to have a master's degree. And then you have a clinical training, and it's kind of like our form of a residency. So it's a dietetic internship. And once you complete that, then you can sit and take a national board exam. And if you pass that, you are then a registered dietitian. But when you're working with athletes, that's why it's so important, and a lot of Division I programs and all sports teams, I know a whole bunch of sports dietitians, have dietitians on board because it's so critical. Because like I said, you're getting paid to perform, and nutrition is what gives you that fuel to do what you're supposed to do. And if you're just trying to eat healthier, I mean, it's astounding to people when I say no food is bad food, and they're like, what? What does that mean? I know, right? Look at your face.
Because I got some popcorn I'm going to chew down over here.
Popcorn's great.
Okay, good to know. Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, sometimes when people like load it up with butter, we could say maybe just a little less, but it's fine. Anyway, so it really has to be individualized, and you can't just say one diet fits all. One diet does not fit all. It needs to be personalized. And just to give you a taste of that, you know, when I was working over here with the athletes, we would actually put them in a bod pod. And Bod Pods are really rare. This machine, it measures your body composition. They used to call it like the spaceship. If you Google it later, you'll see it looks like a little spaceship. And it would give us a printout of their body composition, and we would personalize the diet to the athlete's, you know, specific goals or to what their body was composed of. And that's how we would adjust their calories and their macronutrients along with nutrition education.
Awesome. That's fast. Yeah. Mike. Yeah.
Awesome. So I put down on the bottom here ways that, you know, people can contact you, you know, on Instagram at the bottom, VM_research_RD. And then the Migraine RD is your website.
Yeah. Yes. And I should touch on, I don't work in sports anymore. I don't work, since my research interests are mostly in nutritional neuroscience, I actually study the connections between food and the brain. And specifically, once I pass my board exam, I'll be working with individuals who are diagnosed with vestibular migraine, which is really a debilitating type of migraine, but it also affects their balance. And people can be sensitive to light, to noises, to smells. And a lot of athletes actually are diagnosed with vestibular migraine due to repeat head injuries, because it affects the vestibular nerve, which is between the ear and the brain. And that's kind of what signals to our brain, you know, how, where we are in a certain area and how we can balance. So yeah, people can check out my website, Migraine RD. You can see the services that I'll be providing very soon. And also find out more about what vestibular migraine is and what a registered dietitian is.
Yeah, well, we're definitely going to have to keep talking because, you know, I'm 100%. I need a little bit of help with the, yeah. you know, me and you both being Greek, you know, we're raised to, hey, you're eating this, you're eating this.
Yes, I tell everyone, I tell everyone, Greek people, like, their idea of a diet is refilling your plate when it's empty. And they're like, oh, don't worry, salads, water. I've heard that so many times. It's just salad. You'll burn it no matter what it has on it. It's water.
Yeah, my grandparents were notorious. They're like, no, you gotta eat. Yeah. And you know what? Like back when I was a kid, you know, I would eat a lot, but I would stay thin, and you know, that didn't really translate well later on in life. But my grandparents would you know, God rest their souls, but you know, they would say, you need to eat more. You're too skinny. And now they're probably looking at me like, okay, eat less. But no, it's you know, it was a pleasure having you on. And everyone, please, you know, follow her on Instagram, visit her website, migrainerd.com. And you know, Chrissy, thank you for all your time and all your amazing stories. And you know, we wish you best of luck with your boards coming up. And how much time you got left on
I'm taking in a month or so. So I'm just studying, and then I start my PhD program.
Awesome. Good luck. Best of luck to you. And, we'll keep in touch. And, you know, thank you for watching the show. Thank you for coming on. And, you know, thank you for all your support.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Chrissy. Be safe.
Thanks. You too. Bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, I'm going to have to keep talking and try to –
Yeah, I'm gonna have to
get a nice little diet plan going, but
I'm definitely gonna hit Chrissy up because I've had one too many Popeye's chicken sandwiches in the last 6 months. So, Chrissy Thomopoulos, everybody, hit her up on Instagram. Her website is what's that?
MigraineRD.com.
Yeah, if you want to get in shape, that's wonderful, man. That's amazing, dude. Like, somebody just calls her out of nowhere and goes, hey, we got a contract for you. Why don't you just come over to Europe, to Greece, and just play for us? So like, what? Like, who does that?
I know. Hey, that must be surreal getting that call. And, yeah, like she said, she thought it was a scam. You know? Like,
Could you imagine?
I mean, it sounds a little fishy to me, too. It's like,
yeah.
Oh, this is just Greece calling. We want you to come play basketball for us. Like, okay.
No big deal. Google us. You know what? We're an A2T. Just Google us. Figure it out. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, great stories. And, you know, I love the, you know, the lessons and the path that, you know, sports put her on. you know, and how sports, you know, got her involved in all these different things. And now, you know, now she's doing great, you know, on her way to become a doctor and, you know, nutritionist, and, you know, more power to her, you know, best of luck on her boards in a month. And, you know, starting that PhD program, you know, we definitely need a lot of doctors out there. So, you know, let's go.
We need some, I need a nutritionist. So I'm going to have to keep, I'm going to call her.
Yeah.
All right. News and notes.
News and notes. You want to kick it off?
Kick it off. I mean, let's get started this week. OBJ comes out and says, we're not sure if we should play the season, but then decides to opt in. I mean, I don't know what's going on with this dude. Like, I don't know where he's at, man. I really don't. Like, does he want to play? Does he want to play? Does he want to play for the Browns? Like, it just I don't know how you can just go out and make a comment like that and then just say, I'm going to play. Like, the guy's just like, I just think he's like miserable right now, and he's just not in a happy place and wants to get out of Cleveland in the worst way. What are your thoughts? What did you think about what he said?
You know, it's tricky for me because I agree that there is some things that need to be worked out. I don't think that they should say no season. And if he doesn't want to play, then opt out. I mean, he has until Thursday, until 4 o'clock Eastern to opt out. If he wants to opt out, I mean, nobody's really going to miss him. Let's be real, except maybe the kicking net. You know, there's definitely some extra things that need to be worked on to make sure that everyone is going to be safe and healthy. And with this collective bargaining agreement, well, you know, stuff coming out today and yesterday, you know, I do have a little bit more hope in the NFL season. Yes, you're saying, you know, are they really going to want to, you know, stay home and not live the high life? And I get that, especially the younger, you know, the younger players, you know, like they're pretty much in their glory. They're like, oh, I signed an NFL contract and, you know, now I want to go out there and really party it up. But, you know, you have to take everything into account. Don't go to casinos, don't go to bars, you know, like they want, you know, they're asking you to, you know, try and stay home and try to stay away from, you know, outside people. And if, even if, you know, somebody in their household, God forbid, had COVID, you know, NFL is going to place them and pay for housing for them, you know, yeah. So, like NFL really wants them to do the right thing. But of course you can't, you know, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, with anything, you know, obviously there's laws in the world and people have to go adhere to those laws or, you know, bad things happen. You know, so it's really just a matter of what route are they going to take? Are they going to adhere to it? Make sure that everyone has a safe and healthy football season, no matter if you are 2-12 or not, you know, you still want everyone to finish their seasons out. You want the game of football to stay going strong. You know, it's really going to be up to the players at that point. And I hope that the majority of them can really, you know, batten down the hatches and limit their exposure to the public world. And I just love that, you know, there's an actual plan in place and the NFL is actually telling people to please refrain from that. The MLB's not. That, you know, and that's the difference right there. That's where NFL has a shot. MLB, I don't think, does.
Well, it's been a disaster, MLB. But here's the other thing you got to think of, man, right? Let's say they have a game and, you know, whatever the team is, one team has a COVID outbreak. So, I mean, what do you do? Do you suspend their game for the next couple of weeks? I mean, let's say you got 20, 30 guys on a roster who get sick. That means you got to suspend this other team's game. You got to quarantine those guys. I mean, it's just sort of a domino effect, man. I mean, one game, right, could ruin, like, literally ruin the whole season. Like, what do you do then? You know what I'm saying? Like, how do you quarantine? Like, you got to stop two games. You got to postpone two games. Like, you know, at what point do you say, like, if this happens, you know, we got to call it quits? I mean, that's the only concern that I have. Like, I'm great that they're playing a season. If guys want to opt out, you know, for your health, that's great. But if it's an outbreak, it affects, like, pretty much most of the schedules, if you think about it. Like, if if a team gets an outbreak, the team that they just played before can't play, right? And the team they're playing, and then the team coming up can't play. Like, it's just – there's so much the variables – it's just so much. It's impossible to sort of predict. So I don't know what's going to happen, man, if God forbid that happens. I just hope that, like you said, they stick to their protocols, they stay in their bubbles, they do the right thing. But if you have one team that gets an outbreak, it's different in football than in baseball, you know, because it's going to affect – I mean, it's just going to affect the whole league, because it's not like they're playing 2-3-game series. They're playing, like, one game each weekend. So it's going to be a tough situation if that happens, and I hope it doesn't.
I hear what you're saying, but, you know, there's always going to be that risk, no matter what. You know, even with the NBA and the NHL, they're going to be in a bubble. Well, you know, God forbid something happens, you know, where one person gets it, then a lot of people are going to get it, of course. You know, because it's even the bubble can't be foolproof. You know, there's got to be something. You know, what if, you know, what are they eating? You know, what if somebody orders DoorDash, even if it comes through and gets checked through a couple of different gates to, right, you know, to get there, but, you know, the food that was in there was packed by somebody with COVID. You know, I mean, it's just nothing's foolproof with this. It's just,
I know, but I just think
another thing is, you know, NFL, the second they walk in to practice and onto the, you know, into the facility, you know, they're getting daily tests. And if they catch it right then and there, they quarantine them, you know, get away. And then hopefully that was enough for them to, you know, for them to avoid all their other teammates to getting it. You know, I mean, if you're all going to take a trip to the casino, those are the things, like, you know, you don't have your whole team follow you to the casino, you know, and
that's just them being just like saying, you know what, I don't give a damn. I'm gonna do what I want to do to hell with it. But that's the problem.
But if they're gonna do that, then there's no chance. But the NFL is telling them not to. So
I don't know, man.
The MLB is allowing it. That is the difference. That's the difference maker. You know, yes. Well, the NFL players don't really like to, you know, they like to run by the beat of their own drum and all that. But, you know, it's, you know, obviously, like, you know, people like Antonio Brown, Odell Beckham, you know, like they're very, you know, they're very big headed, and they, you know, anything they say goes, and, you know, I'll marry a kicking net if I want to, and going to a cryo chamber without shoes, and, you know, whatever the case is, I want a new helmet. So it's really going to be up to the players, and we have to just hope for the best that they want to play this season as bad as NFL fans want them to want to watch a season.
But I think here's the thing. I think they do want to play. I think for the guys who want to play, they want to play. The question is, dude, I mean, like you said, nothing is foolproof. Like, if one person gets it, man, and we know how contagious this thing is and how it spreads fast. And if this thing spreads fast and it gets to one whole team, like, one team could literally derail, like, a season. I mean, as you all saw with Major League Baseball. So that's the thing they got to be careful of. So, and I hope that the contingency plans that the NFL has that they've set in place for this will be enough to mitigate something like that, where they don't have to, you know, shut down the season or go from 16 games to 10 games or whatever it is. I mean, we want a full season, full playoffs. We want a Super Bowl. So, you know, knock on wood that these guys behave and, you know, we don't have these outbreaks. But it's going to be interesting, man. It really is. I want to see what these guys – I want to see what happens if there's an outbreak, how the NFL handles it.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I'm just – all I'm going to say is I'm more optimistic now after the collective bargaining agreement came out than I was a couple of days ago. You know, and I'm just going to leave it at that, and we'll see what the – and if they don't want to play, they have until Thursday, 4 p.m. and for the voluntary. And if after that, I heard that it's like irrevocable. You can't just like opt back in. You know, like Nick opted out, and then now he's opting back in. But you can opt out if some medical reason, or, you know, like a family member gets sick, you know, things like that happen inside the season. Then they can opt out for that, you know, for that 350. So at least they do have that option later on, but they can't opt out if they're 1-11. You know,
right. they can't pull a Yoenis Cespedes and just say,
I'm exactly. Out. That's
where this leads into right here. That's where we're going.
Leading into, yes. Exactly. Yoenis. What a perfect name for the stuff that he pulled this weekend. You know, he just left his hotel room, you know, packed up all his stuff. Nobody could find him. They couldn't even find him in Magic City, so he wasn't there. I thought him and Lou Williams went out and had a little cocktail in the midday in Atlanta, but he just disappeared. And you know, his agent called. And there's a couple of stories out there, so I don't know what to believe. But you know, long story short, you know, the agent said that Yoenis is opting out of the season due to the Mets sucking. Oh, I mean COVID. you know, so you know, it's the Mets of, you know, it's really business as usual with the Mets, but this was rock bottom for you know with the Cespedes stuff.
I mean, you, like I just said, you can't make it up, dude. I mean, I was sitting here listening to that, the guy didn't show up, and the first thing I was like, my God, something must have happened to him. You know, you don't show up to the stadium, they send security to his hotel. And the dude just said, you know what? I'm done, man. I'm out. I get my stuff. Then calls his agent, probably while he got to his ranch. He's like, hey, look, tell him I'm done. And here's the thing with Cespedes. It's been like this since the guy got here. It's been one show after another, whether it's on his ranch, breaking his ankles, chasing wild boars or whatever he was that he was doing. Or, you know, it's just enough. And for the Mets and for, like, their young team, like, I think it's best that he's off the jet. But the way he did it, dude, it was just so, like it was just, it's so Mets-ish, and it's so Cespedes-ish. Like, that's just typical of what he does. And it was just horrible, man. I mean, we went from the guy thinking the guy that got kidnapped, he was missing. And look, at the end of the day, I just think he didn't want to play anymore. He realized the Mets aren't that good. He's not going anywhere with the team. He's already made, what, $130 million with them since he's been with the Mets? Or whatever kind of exorbitant amount of money he's made. And he just said, look, I just don't want to play anymore. And you know what's funny? A guy like that, he's going to sit out this season. Next season's going to roll around, and some team's going to offer him a minimum contract. He's going to go play, and he's going to hit 25 home runs, and he's going to drive in, you know, 90 RBIs. And guys like that get second shots because of their talent. But what he's done to the Mets is just – it's wrong, you know. It's just completely wrong. But for those guys, they need to just be like, forget it. We're done with him. Move on and play ball. And it's a good thing for the Mets. I think it's time for – to move on from Cespedes and that whole situation. It's just it's a mess. Typical Mets, a mess.
My entire team sucks. So
hey man, look, you could be like the Yankees, dude. We're just crushing.
Yeah.
Other than Gary Sanchez being a complete head case, we're crushing it. But hey, go ahead, talk about your Mets. Tell our fans about your love for the Mets. Go ahead.
Hey, well, they won yesterday. That was nice, you know.
Cespedes.
Yeah, post Cespedes. That must have been what it was. But, you know, it was DeGrom. So, you know, the chances are in our favor when it's DeGrom. And, you know, the Braves actually just lost now that we already played them four times. Now they lost their star pitcher for the year. You know, but that's obviously – it's a big blow. You know, Soroka – you know, shining star, he tore his Achilles and he's out for the year. So that's not great news. Definitely not for the Braves and, you know, for baseball in general. I mean, who knows how many more weeks we have in baseball, to be honest with you, though. How many games is he really going to miss? But, you know, so while the Mets are dealing with their rock bottom situation, you know, we want to definitely touch on the new part owner of the XFL.
Yes.
Dwayne The Rock Johnson and his ex-wife and a investment group have bought the XFL for, well, the rock bottom price of $15 million. I mean, for a sports league, you know, that's crazy. But, you know, The Rock has always been, you know, he's always loved the game of football. You know, he played in college. He played in CFL. Didn't work out. Then he went to the WWE, and And now he's obviously, you know, one of the highest grossing movie stars on the planet. But he's never lost the love for football. He even had a show, Ballers, you know, where he was, you know, where he was very much involved with yeah. football in that show. So, you know, congratulations to him, you know, from going from $7 in his pocket and signing to the WWE. And now he owns an entire football league, you know, and hopefully he can run it a little bit better than Roger Goodell runs it. And I honestly think, you know, with obviously his, you know, The Rock with his, you know, charisma and his, you know, pretty much his business know-how and the fact that he's not going to have to worry about, you know, the WWE, you know, like Vince McMahon does, you know, I think The Rock's going to give the XFL a fighting shot, you know, and I think he's going to really, you know, put his best foot forward with it because I think it means that much to him. And, you know, I mean, having his own football league, you know, it's gotta be a great feeling, you know, after everything he's been through. And I'm excited for that.
Yeah. You know what The Rock gives it? Legitimacy. You know, when Vince McMahon's name is involved, it's like, oh, it's wrestling. It's a show. Like when they first came out with the XFL yep. and then they come out with it again. And then because of COVID and everything, it goes bankrupt. So he gives it a sense of legitimacy. People are going to take him seriously. And I think another thing, he's going to attract some names, man. Like if they do this right and they run it right, the collaboration they can have with the NFL, I mean, they can do some serious business that people are going to want to go to these games. I mean, if you look at his movies, the way he promotes it on Instagram, his tequila, his workout videos, I mean, he has such a following that I think that alone is going to draw people to the stands. Forget about the product on the field for a second. Just the fact that he owns it and his people are going to be out there, he's going to be promoting his brands. He's going to have – I think he's going to have backing of WWE wrestlers. And I think the general public in large has such an affinity for this guy that I think he's going to do well. I think he's going to be able to turn that league around. He's going to run it the right way, get professionals in there to run that thing the right way. And he's going to – if he can work in tandem with the NFL, make it kind of like a league where the NFL can pluck talent out of that, I think it's great. I think it's great for the NFL for that to happen. I think it's great for the XFL. I think it's great for football fans who want to watch live football year-round. I think that's wonderful. And for The Rock to be in the public eye, I think that's great, bro. I mean, his story is awesome. $7. Guy decides to go into professional wrestling, becomes a legend, you know, with his trademark, you yeah. know, if you smell what The Rock is cooking and
everything. I mean, he was just, you know, he really was is and still is the most electrifying man in sports entertainment. I mean, you know, he's got that quality, you know, and it's really never gone away. You know, I'm obviously, you know, he's gone down different paths as far as, you know, promoting the, you know, trying to stick to the Dwayne Johnson more than The Rock lately, but, you know, obviously, you know, The Rock was his wrestling persona, but everyone still knows him. You know, everyone says The Rock, you know, yeah, exactly. But, you know, I'm very optimistic and it was doing good before COVID, you know,
it was. So, well, like, I was watching some of the
now games. It's only going to propel it to new heights with The Rock behind it. I mean, it's I'm excited for it. I really am, and I wonder when they can get rolling because I think when they originally went bankrupt, XFL said that they were going to take off the rest of this year and I believe next year because they have to rebuild, you know, pretty much the bankroll again. But now right. that, you know, you got The Rock behind it and then you have an investment group behind that, you know, I wonder if they could play in 2021.
You know? We'll see, man. It all depends on the finances. But, you know what's interesting, Mike? I mean, look at you got in baseball, you got J-Rod. You got J-Lo and A-Rod trying to buy a team. You got The Rock buying an XFL team. In the NFL, you got Mahomes buying it, you know, being part of an ownership group. So you're starting to see little by little these athletes, these former athletes, current athletes are getting, you know, Kelce and DeMarco Murray, they're all starting to get involved in the leadership group. And I think as the years go on, I think I would say within the next 5 to 10 years, whether it's baseball, whether it's in the NBA, the NFL, Kevin Garnett is trying to get a group to buy the Timberwolves. You're starting to see former professional athletes buy teams. And I think that's great, man. Yeah. I think it's great for the leagues. You get diversity in the ownership group. You kind of get rid of that old boys club. You get new thinking, a new energy in the leagues. And it's great, man. I think it's awesome. I think as we go along, you're going to see more of these groups and more of these guys own teams. And it's going to be great to have that perspective going from player now to owner, you know, seeing the letting the guys know that are coming up behind them that, hey, you can reach these goals. You can get to the pinnacle of ownership. Yep. And I think it's wonderful. And, you know, like getting back to The Rock, I mean, anything this guy touches is gold, whether it's his shoes on Under Armour or whatever. I don't know. I'm going to go on a limb here and say it may be horrible football, but the fact that The Rock owns it, that he can go out. I don't know if you saw in 1999 when the XFL came out, he did like a cut a promo on the field.
No, I didn't.
There's a video out there. Check it out.
I thought that was a joke. I thought it was a joke back then. So,
but he cut a promo on the field as The Rock, and I'm wondering when he comes back as the owner, if he's going to be cutting promos out there because he's got to sell this thing. And I think, man, that's going to be great, bro. If he can go back to his old days.
I mean, let's be real. The first game, he has to walk up into that 50-yard line and go, finally.
Yes, yes. The Rock is back in football, yes.
You have to.
And he's got
to
do it, yeah.
He for sure has to do that. And, you know, it's gonna be a fun time with him running the show. And, yeah, like you said, you know, these athletes and these celebrities, you know, we're moving away from oil tycoons and tech billionaires. Now we're getting personal brands behind teams. You know, I mean these athletes now with the internet and social media, like their personal brands are just through the roof, way more so than they were 20, 30, 40 years ago. You know, now they build outside of their actual sport. You know, they're sitting there building their brands. Just day in and day out, and it's great. You know, I think it brings an extra level to the game, to entertainment, to sports, you know, all of it. You know, so there's definitely a lot of good with social media, you know, as well as some bad, you know, with younger kids that don't know how to, you know,
really don't know how to behave on social media. Yeah,
use it to the maturity level is not really the best for the younger kids, but
I also think that like as a fan, right? Like you see these players, like they want to win, like they feel like you feel, like especially guys who are passionate on the field, like they want to win and they understand the fans' passion of winning. So you get that in an ownership group. Because like today's owners, you don't really feel like they were, it's more about money and Jerry Jones is about his yacht and this and that. Whereas you get former players, you know the player's like on your side, like he's with you because he wants to win. And I think for fans, I think it's great that you have these players that are owning because they're gonna be a part of it, you know, so to speak. And it's gonna be fun to see. I can't wait to see it.
I want Kevin Hart to buy the Eagles after his that Super Bowl. That was great.
He'll do comedy acts on he'll do like cut his comedy skits out. I like, you know who I want on my team? Dave Chappelle. If that guy can own a team, man, that'd be awesome. Like, let him own the Cleveland Browns. I think it'd be great.
I'll take Jim Brewer buying the Mets.
Saw that. Yeah.
Oh, no. Really? He was actually in the running?
Well, I don't know if it was him. Somebody. I was reading an article today about somebody else. It might have been one of the hedge fund guys or something like that. But I was reading something about the Mets. I don't know if that was the name. But
there's no updates on that. When are they actually?
I think because they're going through the bids right now.
Yeah. Well,
they're going through the bids right now, and who knows, man? Who knows when that's? Oh, Josh Harris, that's what it was. He is. I think he's the owner of the. He's a private equity billionaire, and he already owns three major league sports: the 76ers, the Devils, and the Premier League Soccer Crystal Palace team. So, you know, we'll see.
All right. I mean, the Wolfpons need to come out, but obviously they're, I mean, as according to Scott, they're really good guys, but, you know, I still don't approve of them as the owners, but, you know.
Shout out to Scott for, you know, giving them the thumbs up there, but they got to go, Scott. They got to go.
Yeah. I mean, come on. They can't even buy two Keurigs. But anyway, if they can't even buy multiple Keurigs, you know, they can't fund the team. But
coffee machine in that common area over there.
Yeah. So we got anything else in news and notes tonight? Well, obviously Lakers, they clinched the Western Division. You know, they're just well out in front of everything. What's the Rangers looking like? Uh, they
Where Rangers right now, I'll tell you right now, Rangers are commercial right now. So we'll see. They're down 2-0. They might get knocked out tonight, so we'll see. Okay. By the way, let me ask you this. I've been watching some of the games in the bubbles. I mean, it doesn't feel like the same. Like, I don't know that I see the same intensity out there as you would see with fans out there, people in their own stadiums.
I mean, of course. That's gonna come with that territory. You don't have that adrenaline.
It's like watching these empty baseball stadiums. Like, sometimes these guys lack juice, man. It's
like... Yeah, I mean, it's not stopping Aaron Judge, Mitch.
Nah, that guy's crushing everything. You know what would really suck? If like these outbreak gets worse in Major League Baseball and they have to stop the season, that would suck for him, man.
I don't know. I'm not too optimistic that this season ends, you know, for the MLB. And you know what, the Yankees really are in a prime position right now.
Yeah, don't say, come on, man. Let's let it play out. And I think we're going to be okay. So we'll see.
When did the Mets and the Yankees play? When was the first time they play?
I'm not sure. It's Rangers 1-1. 1-1 going into the third.
All right.
Well, got some life.
Still a chance.
All right.
I think that's it, right, for news and notes.
Good one, man. And as usual, I'm going to get my post-celebratory Diet Coke for our fifth episode.
There we go.
Thank Christy Tomopoulos for joining us tonight. That was a great interview. And again, follow her. Go see her at migrainerd.com. Did I say that right?
You got it. Migrainerd.com. Yes, definitely. You know, visit the website. You know, get in contact with Christy. Thank you again to Christy for coming on. We got another great show lined up for you Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern. You know, stay safe out there. You know, there's a storm coming on the East Coast, if you're here. You know, I even lost power earlier. I didn't know what was going to happen, but you know, we got it back just so we can bring this show to you. You know, so there's higher powers at work here. So thank you for watching. And in the description below or above on Facebook, you know, we do have a questionnaire link. If you do want to come on and share your fan experiences and come and talk about your team and you know, the reasons behind, you know, becoming a fan of that team, you know, please, you know, fill out the questionnaire. We'll email you if we think you're a fit for the show, and we'll love to have you on. So until Thursday, everybody, have a great night, be safe, and enjoy all the sports. Thank you very much. Have a good one.
Buddy, see you Thursday.